Hey everybody, this is Across the Pondcast with Dave
and Abby.
This week we're covering, folklore. We're looking at American and British folklore. We're looking at two characters today, one for each of us on the other side of the pond. I'm going to go over Paul Bunyan, a personal favorite of mine.
And I am going to go with King Arthur, my hero.
It's interesting to note that Abby's character is actually a real person.
Not necessarily.
Well, the historical record says that it was a King Arthur of sorts, but, you know, I don't know.
That's all debatable.
It is.
There were several possible King Arthurs. We'll get to that.
Right. But Paul Bunyan, in most cases, was not a real person because, you know, there aren't giant lumberjacks running around. But still, I like him because, well, frankly, it's because he used to eat a lot of pancakes, and I love pancakes. So I like Paul Bunyan. I mean, it's a pretty simple way to like somebody, but I'm okay with that.
He had some cool animal friends, too.
He did. He actually, as I'll go through, he actually had two blue oxes, but the other one not was well known. But I'll get to that when I get through his part. So, yeah. All right. I'll start off with Paul Bunyan then, and go to King Arthur. Paul Bunyan is also, you know, he was a giant lumberjack. He was also associated with Beatty the Big Blue Ox, which was also a giant blue ox, if you've seen, you know, any kind of images of him. He had a cartoon as well, which I'll get to later on. So he actually originated as an oral tradition between loggers in the late 1800s, early 1900s. He was just, you know, just an oral tradition. Like, you know, Paul Bunyan did this, Paul Bunyan did that, you know. And so really, they don't really know exactly why it came about. It's probably because, you know, people need to tell stories, and if they're lumberjacks, they're going to tell lumberjack-type stories, and Paul Bunyan was a lumberjack, and, you know, there you have it. He's actually popularized, though, in 1916, when a writer for a logging company, Red River Logging in California, actually used him as an advertisement for the logging company. So that's kind of where he kind of got into the mainstream. Although his first appearance was in 1904, he was written about 1904, but he didn't become popular until about 10 years later. Even before that, though, it's thought to be originated in 1870s. So, I mean, Paul Bunyan is, well, you know, he was 40 years old before he really got into the mainstream America's conscience, I suppose. But fun fact, though, is, and this actually goes to Arthur, too, Disney made a movie about Paul Bunyan, also made a movie about King Arthur. So Disney likes to get, you know, they like to get in the folklore business. The Paul Bunyan movie is really cute, though. If you haven't seen it, I recommend you find it. It's probably on YouTube somewhere. It's one of Disney's old movies, but it's cute. He actually has cartoons. He had a cartoon show, too. I never seen that one, but I have seen the Paul Bunyan movie, and it is, you know, it's cute. It's cute Disney. It's quintessential Disney, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. So, like I said, though, Paul Bunyan wasn't a real person, but he could be based off of a real person, and most folklore is. And there's two possible people. They're both French Canadian. So yes, Paul Bunyan, the name is partially originated from French. So he is a Franco-American figure, actually. So a lot of American folklore is kind of descended from the British, but this one's French. Get a little bit of cross-cultural here. The one person could have been Fabien Fournier. He's a French Canadian lumberjack who came to Michigan after the Civil War. He did stand 6 foot tall. He was taller than the average man. It's possibly why we got the giant view of Paul Bunyan. He was known as Saginaw Joe, is his nickname, apparently. I didn't find out why. Probably because he was in Michigan. He's also rumored to have a big appetite, which is probably why Paul Bunyan ate a lot of pancakes, which is probably why I like him. So we kind of there's some correlations here. And Saginaw Joe, or Fabien Fournier, he liked to eat and drink a lot. Eventually, he was murdered in 1875, which kind of, after a fight. I don't know why. They didn't really tell why he got in a fight and got murdered, but he got murdered.
That's awful.
It is, but it just sounds like that's after he got murdered. It kind of like it started to cause those tales to kind of come around. So the theory possibly is that, you know, this guy was a giant. He was a big lumberjack for that time period, and he liked to, you know, eat a lot. And so therefore, once he was killed, like somebody else probably started this rumor about how this big tall lumberjack who got killed, and he probably turned Paul Bunyan into the legend that we have today. One way to go about it. The other one, and I like this one a little better because it's a little less, you know, frightening. The guy was Paul Bon John. So you get Paul and Bun. So there's Paul Bunyan here. He's also a French-Canadian lumberjack. He was also a soldier who fought in the Papanui Rebellion against the British in 1837. A bunch of Canadian lumberjacks were upset with the British over some kind of law. I don't understand it. It's Canadian history. I'm sorry, guys. I don't know my Canadian history. I really don't. I feel bad. I should learn more about Canadian history, but I just don't know anything about it. So I kind of like the Paul Bon John one better because the name sounds more Paul Bunyan-y. And he didn't meet a gruesome end, as far as I know.
Was he tall, though?
They don't know, they did not know that one. There was nothing in the record that said that he was tall or not. It just mentioned that he was a lumberjack soldier who fought against the British in 1837. So he's probably kind of like a folk hero, as opposed to the Canadians. And therefore, yeah. Maybe transcended into, you know, Paul Bunyan. So the legend of Paul Bunyan... The early stories didn't mention him as being a giant, actually. I'm not really sure at what point he became a giant lumberjack, but at some point he did. So the legend says he actually took a half dozen storks to deliver him to his parents. That's how big of a baby he was. So it took six storks to deliver him, which is a very interesting imagery to take. First of all, storks do deliver babies. That's how we get babies, is because of storks. So this makes sense.
Everyone knows.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So, right. So like I say it's unclear whether he was a real person or fictional, but they do claim to have a real grave for Paul Bunyan in northern Minnesota. So supposedly, he was a man. He's buried in northern Minnesota. So, I mean, I don't know. I've never been to Minnesota. Could be something there. I'll have to go. I like graveyards, so I should go over to and find Paul Bunyan's grave. And
huzzah!
I know. It's a good road trip. But there are statues of Paul Bunyan and his blue ox all over the country. There's statues in Minnesota, Maine, California, Michigan. They are all over the place. So, I mean, he is a well-known American folklore figure. So most of the stories featuring Paul Bunyan, though, they feature... great feats of logging, great feats of eating, handling large wooden creatures, and also absurd weather. So, like, you know, he's a big man, so he could deal with a blizzard. It wouldn't bother him because he was a giant man, right? So, it's not like he wasn't really a hero. He was just a legend. He didn't really do anything good or bad. He just lived a very big life. I guess kind of what makes American folklore what it is, though, because we were most of the country was we didn't know about it for most of the time until we started exploring, and so people like Paul Bunyan, most of our folklore is kind of like that. They're, trailblazers. They are adventurers. Like, they go out and find things. They don't necessarily do anything. They just explore things.
They're very tied to the land itself and the landscape.
Right, yeah. So I think it separates American folklore from a lot of other country folklore because we don't really have, they don't really have like a moral of the story. They're just kind of ways for us to expand why we felt we needed to, manifest destiny, make it all the way across the country and find another ocean. Like, that's what Americans did for most of the first 100 some years. We were all about moving west, go west, young man. Kind of Paul Bunyan kind of resembled that. And later on, another episode, I'm going to probably do Johnny Appleseed, similar thing. Johnny Appleseed did the same, similar thing, although he did plant trees, so he was real. So, but that's another day. So a lot of the myths of Paul Bunyan are related to our geography, actually. It's kind of some things I didn't know about. I did know the first one, though. The creation of Minnesota's 10,000 lakes was because it was credited to Paul Bunyan chasing down Babe, the blue ox, after the ox ran away. Paul chased him down and created 10,000 lakes in Minnesota. I knew that one. It's really cute.
How? How did the lakes get created, though?
Was
it the footsteps?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Because they're giant. The giant is running around creating footsteps. So I get that. I've heard that one before. There's no one I actually knew beforehand. The other ones are all interesting, too, and I've never heard of them before. But I have more. So the Mississippi River was Paul created that as well. Because he had a container of water that he took around with him everywhere to drink. One day, a spring leak in Minnesota, and then it flowed to the river, flowed down and created the Mississippi River. So his water container created the Mississippi River, which, interesting.
I like that Yeah. I haven't heard of that one.
I haven't either. And then Bay the Big Blue Ox is actually blue because of a strange weather condition called Winter of Blue Snow. It brings bright blue snowflakes. After a while, it turns the creatures blue. That's why he's blue. I didn't know that either. I'm like, why is he a blue ox? And now I know.
Is this an actual, like, weather condition? Are there scientific, like...
I don't think so. I couldn't find anything. Let me do it. You know, I think it's just another myth. Let me just look at see, winter of blue, see if I find something else here.
I mean, there's a winter of red snow, but that's a completely different situation. That's Valley Forge, when Washington and his troops were there, and they didn't have shoes, so their feet were bleeding.
Yeah. It was a tough time. I would want to have been at Valley Forge. That would have been rough.
Yeah.
There's nothing... Well, there actually was a winter of the blue snow. I think. Is this fiction? Wait. No. No, it's a memoir of Teddy Roosevelt.
Oh.
Yeah, so I guess there was one. Nobody turned blue, though, but it was... Temperatures fell really below zero with really thick snow. And, you know, it was a little heavy snowstorm. And caused it hard for people to breathe and stuff. So there was one, I guess.
So theoretically, there could have been another one, and this was just to symbolize that?
I guess. I guess it was the worst snowstorm in frontier history, according to Teddy Roosevelt. But yeah, but no, nothing saying that it turned people blue, but, you know, it's folklore. Do what we want. Some more. The Grand Canyon was created by Paul when he dragged his axe in search of firewood for a storm, and then he forgot he was dragging it, so he created the Grand Canyon with his axe on accident.
Whoops.
The Finger Lakes in New York were created when Paul tripped and he reached out his hand to steady himself and created the Finger Lakes.
I have heard that one before. I quite like that one,
really?
Too.
I've not heard it before. It makes sense. It's called the Finger Lakes. It makes sense that way.
Yeah.
The Great Lakes were created for a watering hole for Bay the Big Blue Ox.
Aww.
Yeah, right? It's so cute. The waves of the Bay of Fundy, over by Maine, were left over from the Paul's cradle. It was so big that he created waves that still last today.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. The Black Hills, this is kind of a sad one, actually. The Black Hills in South Dakota are a burial site for Paul's other animal, Benny the Little Blue Ox, who ate too many pancakes and died. I like because it's pancakes.
It's so sad, but it's so funny.
I know, because...
too many pancakes.
Death by pancakes. I mean, it's...
So where did Benny the Little Blue Ox come from?
I do not know. I didn't find anything about that. I've always heard Babe, the Big Blue Ox. Apparently he had a little blue ox, too, that ate himself to death. I don't know. This is why... I said, you know, Paul knew he's... oral of tradition, so at some point maybe Benny became Babe. I don't know.
That, I mean, it's a similar thing with a lot of folktales, and King Arthur, I'll talk about that as well, where there are so many aspects and different versions of stories.
Yeah.
That things can often get muddled and confused, or just like there will be one story that doesn't quite fit in, that's left over from a different storyline.
Right, yeah. So, a couple more here, though. The Missouri River was created from Paul's tears after Babe died. So,
aww.
Yeah. It is a cute one, though. Niagara Falls was created as a bathing spot for Paul's children.
So Paul That's had, nice.
Yeah, Paul Bunyan...
That explanation of, like, why there's a giant waterfall.
Right. I didn't know he had kids. So, that means there must be a giant female lumberjack out there somewhere, too. His wife.
Yeah.
I couldn't find her name, though. They didn't say anything about his wife, but they just mentioned his children. So then Mount Lassen, which is in California, was created by Paul's cousin, Big Joe, to use as a stove.
Huh.
And actually, Mount Lassen actually erupted in 1912. So it actually erupted. Not its active volcano still actually erupted a little more than 100 years ago. So Big Joe made a good stove, I guess.
Yeah.
And the last...
Hungry.
And the last one, Mount Hood in Oregon, was created from dirt that Paul used to put out a fire that he had put out. So a lot of our geography in the U.S. is owed to Paul Bunyan and his relatives.
It's pretty amazing.
It is. I mean, yeah, the U.S. owes Paul Bunyan a great debt because he made our geography very unique. Our largest river is due to his tears. Oh, not his tears, his water bottle.
Yeah.
Also, I like Paul Bunyan because he also has a beard, and I like beards. I'm a, beard supporter, so the fact that he has a beard doesn't make him too shabby.
I mean, lumberjacks are cool.
They are. I always kind of want to be a lumberjack. Part of me was like, yeah, I moved up north from a lumberjack when I was younger. I don't know why, but I was like, I'm going to be a lumberjack, and I don't know why. I never chopped wood before in my life.
You know what? It's fine, because I wanted to be a knight in shining armor.
Role reversal. You're supposed to be the damsel in distress, though.
No. Are you kidding? I'd be rescuing the damsels in distress. Have you met me?
I have, but I'm saying it's still a role reversal, traditionally speaking.
Oh, well.
So, that's Paul Bunyan side of things. And, like I said, I encourage you guys to go out and watch Disney cartoon on YouTube. Somewhere. I'm sure it's somewhere. It's Disney. Somebody has to have it somewhere at some point.
It's really cute.
Mm-hmm. It is. And if you ever, if you ever find a Paul Bunyan statue somewhere, if you live nearby one, please pick a picture and shoot it to us on Facebook. We'd like to see some Paul Bunyan statues somewhere.
Yeah, that would be really cool.
Okay, so now it's up to you, Abby. Take it away.
So, I'm going to play off of your Disney aspect because, yes, there is a Disney movie about King Arthur, kind of. It's called The Sword in the Stone, and it's also pretty cute. Merlin is in it as well, and he plays a pretty big role in most of the King Arthur myths. So it came out in 1963. It is also one of the older Disney movies. And, I mean, as the name implies, it's about Arthur pulling a sword out of a stone. And, yeah, I know, it's great. But that's the big, one of the iconic images when you think of King Arthur. Mm-hmm. You think of the sword being pulled out of the stone.
Right.
Also, you think of the sword being thrown into a lake and somebody's hand reaching up and grabbing it.
The Lady of the Lake, right? Is that gonna take, yeah.
I don't think I'm going to be able to get into her because there are so many theories on who she was.
And right.
All of that jazz.
I gave a paper presentation on the King Arthur myth a couple years ago when I was in grad school. So I have a whole paper on it. So I'm pretty familiar with their theory and legend, or all the variations of it. It's fascinating.
There are so many.
Yeah.
And it is great. So King Arthur and his knights of the Round Table. It's still really well known too. I mean, they just made a King Arthur movie.
They did.
I can't remember his name, but he's a big, very pretty guy.
Is it Charlie Hunnam, the guy from that motorcycle show?
Yeah. Sons of Anarchy?
Yeah.
Right, exactly. He's that one. And I had a friend who really liked it, and, I mean, so that's great. I'm going to have to go see it.
Mm-hmm.
My favorite movie is a King Arthur movie with Keira Knightley, and it's a different version of King Arthur because he's actually Roman.
Right, That's actually what the kind of that movie's kind of based off at the time, what they've most believed the person to be. That was kind of the historical record kind of pointed to him being a Roman Brit.
Yeah.
So.
Which I quite like.
Yeah.
Because I mean, a lot of the other legends, he's a man of the people. So we're gonna go back a little bit before The Sword in the Stone. And we'll start with Merlin, this mysterious wizard guy who doesn't really age normally. He's very old and wise throughout most of the myths, and the myths cover a very long period of time, from, Arthur's grandfather, Merlin, is there. And so his backstory is mysterious. There are dragons and Welsh hills and lots of other things. So this sword, Merlin places it in the stone to signify that whoever pulls it out of the stone is the true king when, Britain's going through a rough patch at some point in the future, as it does. So, okay. Where am I going with this? I'll find my train of thought. All right, okay, so the sword is in place, and Merlin is around doing magic-y things, setting up the way for Arthur to become king. So Arthur himself was born to the king of Britain, Uther Pendragon.
It's a great name.
And, yeah, I know, I just adore it. And actually, fun fact, Pen means, like, head, like, leap in Welsh. So, like, Pendragon is the head of the dragon, so the leader of the dragon. And Wales, their symbol is a dragon.
Oh, really?
So I like to think that Uther, Pendragon, was the king of Wales.
That would make sense.
Right? That was just my own little eureka moment one day while I was living in Wales. Anyway, so Uther fancies one of his commander's wives.
As they do.
And, yeah, has Merlin disguise him as his commander so he can go and sleep with this commander's wife. And then this commander dies on the front line of battle because Uther's the king and can tell people where to go. And Igraine, the wife, has a kid, and it's Arthur. But Merlin advises that they send Arthur away to be raised by not quite a commoner, but still not a king, so he can have a very humble and understanding upbringing. And he does. He doesn't know, like, who his true parents are or who he is for a very long time. And one day, we're getting back to the sword and the stone part now, his foster brother, Kai, is at a tournament, and his sword breaks. And they're like, Arthur, go get another sword. And so Arthur's roaming around trying to find a sword, and he's all of a sudden in the forest, and there's this sword sticking in a stone, and he's like, all right, there's a sword, I'll just take that one. And he does. He pulls it out of the stone and brings it back to his foster brother. And the sword is amazing, and Kai wins the tournament, I think, in this version. And they're like, hey, kid, where did you get that sword? And Kai's like, oh, my foster brother found it. I don't know. And they're like, well, that's the sword of the true king of Britain, so... And then Merlin makes Arthur pull it out of the stone a couple more times, and while other people try and can't do it, just to prove to everybody that Arthur really is the king.
Sure. Yeah. My favorite part of the movie, actually, is, though... Why is there an echo?
I don't know. Is there?
Yeah. Wait. It's gone now. Okay. My favorite part of the movie, though, is when he turns into a bird.
Yes.
It's so cute. Arthur's very cute as a bird.
I like when they're fish.
Oh, they are. Yeah, you're right. They're also squirrels, too.
Yeah.
And the Madame Mim.
Yeah.
Disney loves their alliteration.
Yeah, they really do. Okay, so, Arthur's king now. Yay, everybody's accepted him for pulling a sword out of a stone. So, as king, of course, he needs a queen. And here's where another of the more well-known legends comes from. The original love triangle. So, Arthur's queen is Guinevere, and she's beautiful and lovely and, you know, all that. And one of Arthur's comrades is Lancelot. So Arthur has a bunch of really great knight friends that he gathers, and they all sit at a round table to show that they are all equal, which is a brilliant idea. Mm-hmm. And, you know, thanks to Merlin for, you know, having Arthur brought up in a very humble household.
Sure, right, yeah.
He's a man of the people. So, Lancelot is the best knight. Like, he's the best at fighting, he's the best looking. So, naturally, you know, everybody loves him. Including Arthur. He's Arthur's best friend. But Lancelot really likes Arthur's wife. Which seems to happen a lot.
Yeah.
Awkwardly, though, like, Guinevere really likes Lancelot, too, and that gets them in a lot of trouble. we'll skip very far ahead down the line because there's so much King Arthur text that it could just go on forever. So, further down the line, Arthur's other comrades, like, set up a trap to prove that Lancelot and Guinevere are having an affair. And it kind of works, and so Lancelot and Guinevere are banished, although Guinevere is originally sentenced to death, so they're gonna burn her.
Mm.
And Lancelot swoops in and saves her and saves the day. They don't really have a happy ending, though, Lancelot and Guinevere. They don't get to stay together. Guinevere gets herself to a nunnery.
As you do.
Hamlet joke. And Lancelot goes back to rule his land, and there's a huge battle. But this whole Lancelot and Guinevere thing, in correlation with the fact that Arthur had a kid with his half-sister, that ultimately leads to Arthur's death, because he's killed by Mordred, the kid he had with his half-sister, in a battle that I think was against Lancelot because of the whole Guinevere thing. It was a mess.
So it leveled it to you.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So Arthur and Mordred kill each other,
mm-hmm.
basically. So... once again, Britain has no clear ruler, and there's going to be chaos. So Arthur tells his one knight to take the sword and throw it back into the lake, and he fails a couple of times, but he finally throws it back, and that's when the hand comes up and grabs the sword and hides it away under the water, probably to Avalon, which I haven't even gotten to. And then these strange women in a boat come and take Arthur to this mystical Isle of Avalon, which nobody really knows where it is. It's hidden in the mists somewhere.
It's the same place where the whales of whales are from.
Sure.
Yep.
We'll go with that. It probably is off of Wales. I mean, maybe. And then Arthur is dead. But, however, the legend, what really resonates, is that Arthur is the once and future king. So, when Britain needs him most, Arthur will come back and rule again and unite everybody and create this wonderful kingdom like Camelot was, supposedly.
So...
I'm actually wondering when he's going to turn up, because I think it's about time.
So, I mean, essentially, is that myth supporting reincarnation? So he would be reincarnated, come back as a baby, and grow up again? Or
it's not clear on that at all. It could be reincarnation. He could rise from the dead and be a scary zombie corpse. It would probably just be dust by now.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, he's been dead for a good, 1,100 years?
It depends on when he lived, which we don't even know for sure.
I heard, 900 was, the...
Yeah.
It took 1,100 years then. I mean, it's a while.
It's quite a while. I didn't even mention my favorite part of the legend, which I will really quickly. So everybody knows Excalibur the sword, right?
Yes.
What people don't remember, which is the opposite of the point, is that the scabbard that came with Excalibur was far more important than the sword itself. It was the scabbard that protected King Arthur.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh. I never knew that one.
Yeah. Most people don't, really. But, yeah, the scabbard was the most important thing because it protected the sword and, therefore, King Arthur as well.
Hmm. Interesting. My favorite Arthurian legend all was Gawain the Green Knight. That was my favorite one, yes. Though.
That is a good one.
Yeah. That's a good point to make, though, too, is the Arthurian legend is not just Arthur, it's several characters over. I mean, it's the canon for Arthurian legend is huge. So.
It is, and also, a lot of it has been romanticized by the French. So, Morte d'Arthur and, the Arthurian, Lancelot and Guinevere, that's a very romanticized French version of, the legends. There's also a really Welsh one that's in a book called the Mabinogion. I really hope I said that right.
I've heard of it. Welsh.
Yeah. And it's a very different story to that, and, yeah.
Yeah, Courtly Love was a French addition to the Arthurian legend.
Yes.
You know how the French do. They love their love.
Exactly.
All right. So we have covered some two great whoppers and some folklore for each side of the coin. Obviously, as you can see, Arthur had much more, you know, Arthur's legend is much more of a moralistic story, whereas Paul Bunyan is much more of the American myth. It is, that like we mentioned before, that go forth, young man, and explore. Like, there's not...
Yeah.
You're not going to learn any lessons of life in Paul Bunyan, except eat pancakes, because pancakes are delicious.
Yeah, pancakes are the best. Also, while Paul Bunyan is very rooted in the land, and you know where these landmarks are, the Arthurian myths are a bit vague. We don't know where Avalon is. We don't know where Arthur is buried, or where any of his knights are buried, or where Camelot was. We have to guess. I mean, the Welsh, like, the forests in Wales are gorgeous and obviously very mythological, but we don't know where anything was.
Speaking of, so just on this point, the Romans were never in Wales, right? The Romans were just in England proper. So who was in Wales, like, originally?
Native people.
Did the Celts? Are the Celts from Wales? Oh, you don't know?
There were a bunch of native tribes that were everywhere that ruled their own little kingdoms and such. I mean, in the Arthur myths, Igraine and Gerlois, I think is how you pronounce his name. Igraine is Arthur's mom. They live in, like, Cornwall, which is its own little bit of England. It's so different.
Okay.
But everything was broken up differently, and there were many kings. Arthur was just the high king.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
So.
Unclear.
Yeah. There was, I just read Mists of Avalon, and in that there was a king of North Wales. So.
When did Wales join the UK? Do you know that?
I have no idea.
No idea?
Oh, geez. It was always a part of it.
At some point, Wales was
Never separated from it.
Never?
No. It's on a tiny island.
Is it an island? Well, I guess the UK's island. Hold on. Wales. Oh, Cardiff's the capital of Wales. I know about Cardiff.
Yeah.
I read a Roald Dahl book took place in Cardiff. I think he grew up in Cardiff.
There's a street or like a lane named after him in Cardiff.
Let's see. Okay. England conquered Wales in 1282.
Yeah. So it was always a part.
Well, I mean, before 1282 it wasn't, but I mean for... Yeah.
Yeah, but nothing was really a part of anything before 1282. Everything was fighting each other.
True. That was rough and tumble time, as it were.
Yeah. That's why, you know, legends like King Arthur, this man who united so many people and had a very, like, well, a relatively peaceful reign.
True.
That's why they stick around.
Very good. All right, guys. Well, we've gone probably longer than we probably should have today. We're up to, like, 33 minutes. Oh, you're fine. It's kind of nice to have a little more content. We had a good episode here today. So, again, we apologize for we were gone for kind of a longer time than normal. Life's crazy. We have to do things, but we promise to be back as soon as we can with the next episode. So for Dave
and Abby,
have a good day.
Cheerio.